Welcome back to EXPN, The Experience. I'm Dirk Bradley.
And I'm Warren Rustboro. Our top story tonight, a newfound nuisance has overwhelmed the ring and even begun spreading into the spokes. An unprecedented migration of griffins has made their home in any space they can find.
Griffins? Did you say griffins? If there's even a possibility of adopting a Ligerhawk, I will devote my life to the quest.
Well, Dirk, it seems these griffins have little relation to the CR2 large monstrosities recently thwarted by the Transient Exiles. These aren't man-eating jaguar falcons or feral hyena vultures. Instead, these tiny tormentors are adapted to urban living. Robin rats, vulture possums, and raven nutria have become a common sight throughout Zenith, and the authorities are at a loss.
Whoa, wait a minute. A damn crabbit heisted my croissant this morning. You're telling me that babeaked burglar was a griffin?
If by crabbit you mean crow rabbit, more than likely. The variety and biodiversity of the vicious vermin has given local zoologists, cryptobiologists, and teratologists pause. There seem to be hundreds of species of the hybrid with no end in sight. Normally, a particularly well-suited breed would outcompete the others, leaving a single dominant griffin, which could be easily countered, but as it stands, there is little hope for a simple solution.
Well, I mean, could we just, you know...
What? Oh, gods, Dirk, no, we can't eat them.
And why not? I mean, if I see a roasted pecker chuck or a cockmouse, I'll take a bite.
Titmouse.
Rusty, don't be vulgar. I'm just saying, if we can't find a natural predator, us humanoids make a pretty damn good top to these food chain bottoms.
In any case, hero rank teams have been offered a standard compensation quest package to hunt street griffins.
Ah, the old kill X creatures for Y gold. A classic. I wonder how many waddles I'd have to throttle for a feather boa or a pelt purse. Because I don't mind getting beak blasted for a goose cat down comforter.
Reports suggest the only things volunteers will get is lice.
Eh, better than nothing.
The pages, the guardians of the labyrinth, turned their heads from side to side, their motions slow and deliberate. They scrutinize your every detail, taking you all in. When one of them sees Iavos's spellbook, it seems to take intense notice. The pages each reach for a book at their sides and open them before producing a pen from a small leather pouch. After a moment's scribbling, they seem to reach into the book itself, and from it, they each draw a long sword. Yet these blades are not made of metal, but layer upon layer of folded and polished paper.
Iavos holds his spellbook to his chest and says, "Stop, please! We're here to seek knowledge and help, not to harm your precious library."
The words seem to fall on deaf ears, or they would if you could tell if they even had ears. The remainder of the book rearranges itself into a shield of the same make, as the pages ready themselves to defend the library.
Fuck!
Perhaps we have to write them a note.
I want everybody to roll initiative.
Oh, beans.
Ah, shit, I'm about to get paper cuts.
Pug of War?
Pug of War!
Halifon is at the top of the initiative.
All right. They drew blades. Hal's just going to take a step forward, and I'm going to take the dodge action in case they attack me, but I'm going to get in front so that if they attack somebody, they'll get to me first.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, and that moves it to Gaspar's turn.
Gaspar is going to flip over the nearest table, and with the sheets of paper and whatever accoutrement are on top of it, making a little cloud of distraction, Gaspar is going to duck down and attempt to hide.
All right, give me a stealth.
Stealthy boy. That is a 26.
Very nice, yeah. You throw a table up and they seem to have completely lost the ability to track motion because they can't see you now.
Yeah, they don't know which side of the table I'm coming from. And using that uncertainty, I'm going to pop out of the right side and shoot one of the pages.
All right, sounds good to me.
Give me that roll.
Are you ready to screw me?
That is a 22 to hit.
Nice. You pop out from cover and you take your shot. You notice that the quarrel flies right through the paper and lands in the wall behind them. it doesn't seem to take terribly much notice of the damage.
I did not like the sound of that.
Mm-mm.
It wasn't satisfying.
It looks down at the hole in its paper and looks up at you and then begins to move. It slowly begins to flank you, moving to one side. And then it lifts its mask ever so gently and you hear a roiling wet sound. From the opening in the mask, you see a large amount of viscous, pale white fluid spew forth in a line. I would like Gaspar and Halifon to roll me a dexterity saving throw.
I'm about to be stuck in the middle with you.
Is this whiteout?
Undo!
All right. For this dex save, I'm going to use the new D20 that Dana bought me for my birthday the other day. This roll seems important.
Happy birthday.
It's a 7.
It's a lucky number.
Not for dex saves.
Oh, but I'm a barbarian, so I have danger sense.
Hell yes.
So hell yeah. That's an 8 or a 16. I'll take the 16.
Much better. And what did you get?
16 total.
Marvelous. You very narrowly evade the 5-foot-wide, 30-foot-long line of glue, but it does manage to create a difficult terrain everywhere it landed.
You're going to get some Elmers and just lay it down on the battle map.
The other page also begins to move up toward Halifon. And for a moment, you notice that the surface of the shield begins to open and wave and shimmer, the pages seeming to almost blow in the wind. As they do, shards of paper begin to fly out of it. I would like Gaspar, Halifon, and Iavos to roll me a dexterity saving throw.
Okay.
Shucks. You sure it's not like an intelligence saving throw? Because it's a page of a book? I don't know.
They're trying to put Hal to sleep.
Oh, damn. I rolled an 18.
Woo!
Which gives me an 18.
I rolled a 17, which gives me an 18.
Hey.
21 total.
Nice.
Ooh.
Well, nobody seemed to have gotten hit by the paper cut.
Nice. Iavos has a pretty natural advantage over literature.
But you all do take half damage. This is slashing damage.
Okay.
That is a total of 16 damage coming at you. You're going to be cutting that in half to 8.
Well, that perfectly makes my false life just poof away.
The shards of paper seem too sharp, sharper than they have any reason to be. And they cut through skin as if you had been paper cut. But it's enough to cause immediate and excruciating bleeding.
Ooh.
And that makes it Penny's turn.
Penny is going to move up and keep formation with Hal.
Okay.
And then I'm going to cast Dissonant Whispers on the creature before me. That means that it gets to make a wisdom saving throw or take 3d6 damage and immediately flee as far as it can from Penny using its reaction. Mm. On a successful save, it takes half damage and doesn't flee. But if it can't hear, if it's deaf, then it's not affected by this spell.
I see. As soon as the whispers begin to emanate from you, they seem to just kind of pass over the creature, almost like it doesn't really process information through auditory data.
Okay, and then with Penny's bonus action, she is going to whisper to her teammates, they don't seem to hear. Their sensory works in some other way. And she's going to say to Gaspar, how do we kill these, Gaspar? You know how to kill everything.
Iavos will not like it.
And with that, she gives Gaspar Bardic Inspiration.
Woo! All right, so Gaspar has Bardic Inspiration. Good to know. Do you have anything else?
Nope, that's everything that Penny can do because she's going to stay in formation.
All right, and that moves it to Iavos' turn.
Okay, hearing Penny's question to Gaspar, he's just going to bark out, we should try to avoid fire at all cost.
True, but also try slashing.
Last resort. So y'all ready for me to try something real stupid and possibly worthless?
Let me hear it.
Taking one of the items off of his necklace, an old long quill pen. Iavos looks to the apoxithery that Dunn burped glue all over his friends. You may not have any vital organs, but ink too can bleed. And he's going to use prestidigitation. One of its abilities is to clean or soil 1 cubic foot. And I'm going to attempt to make the ink on the writing of his body bleed into itself. Tarnishing a cubic foot of his body.
Interesting. What cubic foot?
Like right through the face, neck, chest area.
Okay.
The Vogue.
That Vogue, yeah.
So you try to blast him in the Vogue box. All right.
Yeah. It's Zach, kind of a curveball on that one.
Zach is now like...
Brilliant.
I can almost see it like trying to block it with a shield.
How does this monster work and what will this affect?
I'm going to say you need to roll a ranged spell attack.
Okay.
And we'll see how that goes.
Cool. Not super with a 9.
Okay. So as soon as you cast your prestidigitation, you do see some of the ink on its face and chest area begin to bleed, but it quickly holds up its shield to block it. As soon as it does, the shield turns into a useless pile of paper on the floor.
Dope.
It now is no longer benefiting from carrying a shield.
I'll take it. It's a pretty good cantrip. Destroy shield cantrip. Plus a cool one-liner. I always like those. And while the formation is very important, Iavos is very fragile, and these things both have shown us an area of effect attack, so I'm actually going to slide 5 feet away from the group, towards it, trying to avoid lines and cones at all cost.
I get it.
And that's it for Iavos.
I love it. Well, that brings us right back to Halifon Orison.
Cool. Hal is going to, from where he is, jump up onto the table next to him, and Hal is going to zip off a one-liner. Let's see if this paper cuts. And I'm going to swing at it. With my bone halberd.
I love it. Go ahead and roll it.
Cutting paper with bone.
Hal's been waiting to destroy literature this entire time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is that? That's a 19 plus 5. 24.
Definitely a hit.
I hope so.
1d10. 3.
Careful, they're wearing plot armor.
Yeah. Oh. 10 points of slashing damage.
That is not resisted.
Okay, good to know.
You drag your halberd across its belly and you notice that the paper kind of opens up, the many, many layers kind of foxing around the edges and starting to create an opening in its vestments. And that makes it Gaspar's turn.
Gaspar is going to kick up the table that he's hiding behind in the same motion, slide underneath it to roll and move behind the page that Hal is engaged with and write some slash fiction.
I really like that. Okay. And what do you got?
You've been waiting for LUQ slash fiction for a while now.
That is a 21 to hit.
That definitely hits.
For a total of 13 points of damage.
Whoo!
And it is with my saber now. You know, slash fiction. You got it.
Right.
Obviously, you know what I've explained myself.
You draw another line through its open vestments, and it creates almost like a V shape, and you see the page begin to open up in front of it, flapping around in the minor wind created by his motion. And that makes it the page's turn.
You done dog-eared him.
This one still has a charge of binding glue. And so we'll use that on Hal and Penny in front of it. I want each of you to roll me a dexterity saving throw.
Okay.
You have advantage.
Yeah, I have danger sense. I realized I actually had double advantage last time because I'd also taken the dodge action, but that doesn't do anything.
So. Right.
So far, the dice Dana gave me are doing better than my other ones are. 16. Again.
Nice.
That's what I rolled last time.
23.
Beautiful. Neither of you are affected, but now there is a cross of difficult terrain on which you are currently standing. You also notice that now that the turn is up, the original line that was drawn has begun to harden.
Oh.
I need you, Hal, to roll me a dexterity saving throw to see if you can get out of it before it hardens around your feet. Oh, no, you're on the table. Wait. No, hold on. It would have gotten on the table.
Okay. 14.
Okay, you're fine. All right.
I can't glue these glutes.
Yeah. Exactly. And that is the end of his turn. The other page moves up to Iavos.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
And begins to attack him.
Good and great.
Does a 24 hit?
You know it does.
Wait, studded leather.
Right.
Does a 14 hit?
I actually need to check. I haven't upgraded my armor class since I got it. Studded leather is 3.
12 plus dex.
12 plus dex. Yes, it's super hits.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. Yikes. Hold on. Yeah, that's a yikes. Hold on.
Oh, boy.
The page moves like a knight, like a soldier. He's trained, And there's nuance in his motions, nuance in his strikes. This doesn't look like a mindless automaton when it's attacking you. But when it stops, it begins to almost dissolve that persona. But when he does strike, he strikes well.
That's plagiarism. He's copying.
Oh. Copyright infringement. His initial step towards you is a long thrust, driving through your studded leather and into your belly. The second is a strike across your face, cutting deep into your cheek and across the bridge of your nose. He deals 20 damage.
Oh, boy. Golly goody. Good, great goodness. I am going to use a spell secret to activate a radiant hellish rebuke.
Ooh.
As a pair of glowing arms wrap around me, maternal and washed in comforting light, and then lash out against this creature without a fire that burns, but a radiance that damages.
I like that. Go ahead and roll me that beautiful damage.
It needs to make me a dexterity saving throw.
Thank you.
It's just like light that bleaches the pages.
What is the difficulty?
It is 13.
13. He does beat a 13.
Okay. I'll take that. So he takes 8 radiant damage, which is halved.
Okay.
God, are you still conscious?
Yes. Just barely.
Okay.
He had the a false life.
Oh, that's right.
He did. that was from the explosion. That exactly zeroed it out. And I have 4 hit points left.
Okay. Yeah. So the false life kept you alive.
Yes. To this point.
Yeah.
And that makes it Penny's turn.
Seeing Iavos get attacked, Penny's going to cry out, "You two are doing a good job of binding. Let me go provide some cover."
I see what you did.
There are still puns left.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We got some book puns, everybody.
Pages of them.
And Penny is going to go engage with the page in front of Iavos.
Opposite side or side to side?
I'm going to go to the opposite side as Iavos to flank this creature.
All right.
And Penny is going to slash it with Zillos.
Awesome.
That is also a 23 to hit.
Very good. That definitely hits.
Yes, please save me.
And that does 9 damage.
All right. As you draw the blade through the pages, even though no other person has witnessed this, your blade comes away wet with ink, and it is now charged for your ability.
I was going to say that I strike it with killing intent.
Yes.
Excellent. And then with Penny's bonus action, she's going to whisper some kind words, kind of low in her breath. And Iavos is going to feel warmth radiating from his friendship bracelet as he's hit with a healing word.
I love it.
Aw. Friendship.
Camaraderie.
You regain 5 hit points.
That's more than double what I had. Thank you, Penny.
Okay, and that makes it Iavos' turn.
Cool, cool, good and good.
This page is in tatters, barely hanging on. Most of its body seems to be hanging loose and limp.
All right, realizing that the best way to damage this book is with the horrifying forces of nature that are so keen on destroying everyone's favorite books, he's going to place a hand on its paper chest, and he's going to call upon the cold, frigid winter of the Withering Acre and hit it with a frostbite. And as the permafrost covers it, the water melts and begins to peel and corrode at the paper as it gets soaked.
I like it.
So he needs to make me a constitution saving throw.
Okay. Not its strong suit, but that 19 does help.
Odd beans. Nothing happens. It's a cantrip.
As the cold begins to settle, the total lack of any and all moisture in the air makes the frost almost fail to even come to being. But everybody feels a nice cool breeze.
Well, because it's still alive and I don't want to die, I am going to have to use another spell, which is not a cantrip. So as the glamour of his new enchanted robes takes effect, there is a small vortex of dust and dry air as Iavos vanishes from in front of this creature and reappears on the opposite end of the room using Misty Step.
I like it.
Exactly there. Otherwise, he would have just been fucking knocked right on his dumb butt.
Nah, we had you.
That is very, very good. And that makes it Halifon Orison's turn.
All right. Hal is going to shift one space closer to Penny just to get the other page in range, and then just take a swing, try and take the head off of this book.
All right. Go ahead and give me the attack.
Yeah. And I'm going to go ahead and reckless attack.
Yeah.
Just for advantage on the swing.
Mm-hmm.
Try and end this. 21 total.
That definitely hits.
We'll hit. And it's going to take 11 points of damage to the one that Gaspar and I are fighting.
Nice. You strike for the head, and that's exactly what you take off as your halberd finds home. It shears through it the way that scissors do through paper as soon as it begins to glide, and the feeling is deeply satisfying. But not nearly so satisfying as the moment when the paper crumbles to the floor and reveals that there is nothing inside.
Scissors beats paper, bitch.
And that makes it Gaspar's turn.
Was that the sound of it dying?
Yes.
Cool. As Hal is moving counterclockwise, cutting this page up, Gaspar is going to follow suit, run around it, and watches as the thing crumbles into nothing, but continue on around the desks and all the way behind the other page.
Formation.
Yeah. The rotations.
Mm-hmm.
And take this opportunity to cut it up.
I love it.
That is a 16 to hit.
All right. That does hit.
Doesn't have a shield to protect itself.
Even if it did, you would have just gotten it.
Mm. I'm pretty sure it's because, yeah, I almost took the shield.
I definitely did something this fight, right?
Yeah.
And that is 13 points of slashing damage.
Excellent. A repeat of the previous situation as you cut through the paper, leaving it a useless pile of old scrolls.
I have read your story. It doesn't make the final cut.
There you stand in the wreckage of the two pages, free to do as you will.
As the second page falls, Penny kneels down, places a finger across its lips.
Shh. Iavos, grabbing the wound at his stomach and moving forward, having a little more vitality after Penny's well-timed healing, is going to kneel also to investigate what is written on these strange creatures and explore the pages of their ruined body. One may say horrorgami.
It's gorigami now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
You begin to pick them up and you are struck by their weight. They have heft. This is no paper, but vellum, pounded out from leathers.
Mm.
And inside, there is no body at all. No sign of any core or center to their being. As you examine, or perhaps peruse, the fallen pages, the words that make up the story of their form bring a dawning horror, for there is no narrative to be found. You read no theses or conclusions. Instead, only the last anguished thoughts of a dying mind.
And Team Gold Dragon vanquishes the pages of the library. What a stunning show of skill.
Oh man, watching the arcane uncle spill ink on daddy's special paperwork? You bet your late fees I'm gonna have a hard time sleeping tonight.
With any luck, Mr. Isadora will be able to suss out the suspicious writings on the remnants of the pages.
You know, Russ, there's things in this cosmos I'd rather not find out. And something tells me all of them are in this library.
Dirk, I would imagine hiding things inside of books has proven a successful deterrent to your curiosity in the past.
In other news, it looks like our heroes are making headway, grifting the griffins into an early gravy.
After a briefing, hero teams Metal and Mana, Wild Company, and Gutter Snipes have sealed the ring terminals with the help of the Magical Union of Laborers and are clearing them one by one.
Sounds like a headache. Why not just whip up some big magic whammy to put the rocks to these bush dorks?
Because, Dirk, they're not killing them.
What? They got no kill cages? What the hells are you talking about? Who's gonna pigeonhole all these squab possums?
It's inhumane, Dirk. Griffins in many planes are among the more intelligent magical beasts, and the ring-tailed Patu, despite its vacant stare, is no exception.
Intelligent? I just watched a shoebill skunk bone down on some guy's size 10 stat wars, while a dodo dog threw up a newspaper and then ate it again.
Now that's some secondhand news.
We're not dealing with the top brass here, Rusty. These half-birds are the lowest form of existence I've ever seen. The pricks of the litter, the cream of the crap.
Regardless, there are many creatures' rights activists who would not see these invasive species come to harm.
Well, we'll see how they feel when a hawk fox swoops down and hoists their four-year-old into the rafters for a bit of the devour hour. But me, I'm gonna do something about it.
Dirk, where are you going? Dirk, your injuries haven't healed yet. Dirk! Dirk!
We're about to witness a planar phenomenon, a keyhole between worlds that only marketing can penetrate. Join me as we glimpse into the Adverse.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Buntwine. Coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hello, I'm Flurhagen. I raise Ulro in the mountains of Granch. I shear my Ulro weekly to keep them fresh and buoyant. But sometimes I'm the one who needs to be sheared. How can I herd my Ulro through the craggy forests of Granch when my craggy forests have turned into a dank swamp of festering filth? I've mired my considerable physical gifts in a putrid thicket of wild undergrowth, untouched by the gentle caress of the sun for centuries. That's why it's time for Manscaped. The lawnmower uses cutting-edge technology. Well beyond the bush lore of this nut-rotten old mountain coot, I use rusty sickles and broken bottles left by hikers to scratch away at the nightmare beneath my small clothes. Now ceramic blades gently shear my natural wool to be used in arts and crafts, and Manscaped's ball fresheners leave me feeling like a misty clearing instead of a humid, mossy bayou. For 20% off your purchase and free shipping, go to manscaped.com and use the code LUQ. That's 20% off free shipping with the discount code LUQ. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
An LUQD haiku, or a haiku-D. Such rad fans tune in. Humor, action, nerdy stuff. The mid-roll is now. Hi, LUQDs. It's true, though, you are rad. Whether you're a regular listener or a full-on Patreon supporter of the show, we're grateful to have you. Visit theluq.com to find links to everything you need to know about the show. And find new ways to support us if you dream of the show going for a long time, like we do. You can get directed to our Patreon, which is loaded with juicy rewards, the merch page with fresh new products on the regular, and all other social media, which we'd love to have more of you interact with us on. And not to mention the sacred Discord, which is awesome and really blowing up lately for new members. It's wild to see. If you join the Patreon at our higher tiers, you can have a character that you make be made part of the story of the show, as you've heard throughout the season. Or you can become a legendary patron and have your name mentioned during the mid-roll as your legendary team comes up. Our current legendary teams are the Titan's Rise, the Twilight Concord, the Ceaseless Horde, and the Forgotten Legacy, with Wagon, Insanity, and John Reinhardt. If you want to contact us to advertise with the show or get out a personal message, admin@slapdashstudios.com is the email. If you want to send us actual physical stuff that isn't homemade food, the P.O. Box is 230091 Tigard, Oregon 97281. We love fan art. If you're in the Portland area on the weekend of September the 10th through 12th, the LUQ will have a live game panel on Sunday at 11:45 a.m. And we'll let you know if that changes ASAP. Follow us at twitch.tv/slapdashstreams to watch me and Zach play games throughout the week, including our cooperative Soulink Nuzlocke on Wednesdays and new episodes of the LUQ premiering Monday night, currently hosted by the fabulous Dungeon Mistress Dana. And a special thank you to LU Cutie Brandon Lake for an idea they put in our Discord based on artwork from draconym.tumblr.com. That's draconym.tumblr.com. We love hearing everyone's ideas, and it's just one more reason to join the Discord and the Patreon. But enough out of me, let's get you back to the battle axes.
Thirst for magic. Thirst for adventure. Thirst for life. Only one drink can shapeshift your thirst into a refreshing explosion of carbonation that's so delicious. Get your paws on a can of rock Shasta and drink deep the enchanting flavors like Black Void, Lemon Demon, Orange Pelt, and Mountain Gush. When you need to get quenched, get your paws, if you can, on the Tiger Striped can.
Stay cool, stay fresh, put a flavor to the test. When the soda is inside you, got the magic of the Tiger Rock Shasta is the best. Stay cool, stay fresh, put our flavors to the test. When the soda is inside you, got the magic of the Tiger Rock Shasta is the best.
Thumbs down. That means I like it. Rochester! A Rochester!
You read the words scrawled in dark red-brown ink across the flesh of the pages. You find the tortured thoughts of a dying mind. The descriptions, if the prose contained therein can indeed be called that, convey a process most closely compared to flaying. But the stream of consciousness does not stop there, only the pain. Instead, the narrative takes on a third-party structure as the skin is painstakingly and gruesomely processed into vellum and eventually formed through arcane profanity into the form you now see before you.
Hmm. Do I sense from the other books I've studied that the parchment they were made of is normal paper or heavy vellum like this?
From what you can tell, there has not been any paper in this entire facility.
This is unquieting, to say the least. I don't know if these books are not what was once living things, perhaps. These creatures, most certainly. The pages in this library are made from, it seems, flesh. It could be that each of these tomes is the entirety of a life, transcribed to word on its own skin. Just a theory, but the horrors we have seen here, they do indicate such terrible things.
I was right. We are supposed to kill the books. I knew it.
Either way, our quest has not been made clear.
Penny walks over to a window and leans slightly out, looking downwards. Well, I don't know about you, but where I come from, we read from top to bottom.
Give me a perception check.
I got a 10.
Gotcha. Okay. You look down and you do see that you are much closer to the cloud of glowing motes and the gray haze below.
We're making progress.
If these shelves are like a catacomb of literature, perhaps our job here is to end the cruel imprisonment caused by the author of these books.
That is beginning to make sense to me, then.
I don't think I'll be as distracted as we continue.
You don't intend to read any more books?
No, I will. I'm just not going to stop at every one.
Well, no, I fucking will.
Let's not go crazy here.
Perfect. At the revelation of these creatures' origin, Penelope shudders. I always did prefer an oral tradition.
You continue on your journey downward. The books contained become more ominous, more worrisome. Many of them simply contain diaries, personal struggles, and vague descriptions of long ago embarrassments and humiliations. One in particular that seems to resonate with that same malevolent energy draws your eye, Iavos, and you're fairly certain you can prevent it from doing you any harm.
I will steal my mind as I investigate.
It is titled The Song in Rounds by Constance Perpet. It begins simply, a modest story of a woman struggling with her identity. But as you continue, you find you are enraptured by her words, and soon find it almost impossible to tear yourself away. You can see now that the intent is to reveal the fact that the book is unfinished, and your compulsion to grab a pen and write until you can no longer write anymore is overwhelming.
Mm. Do I manage to stave off the ensorcelment?
You do indeed. Knowing now what these things are, you're able to set up a psychic bulwark for yourself.
Mm. While we have stopped to investigate this, perhaps we could take a moment to gather ourselves. That battle was a bit much for me. I don't mean to slow you down with my physical limitations, but these wounds are still very hard to move with.
Can we take a short rest?
Yeah, absolutely you can.
Then I will rest for just a moment. Thank you for your patience.
Take your time. We have extra rations.
I'm going to spend some HD.
Mm.
Start with these three.
High definition healing.
I'm definitely rolling my one cleric one because it is much larger than my... Oh, wait. Wizards are D6 now, isn't that?
Or no, yeah, they are. Yeah, they're sixes. Yeah.
Were you about to roll D4s?
I'm stuck in third edition, baby. And every other edition that has wizards. Oh, that's an 8. That's nice.
Mm.
Plus my con mod of 1. Yeah, it is 1. I thought it was going to be 0, but I was wrong. So...
Gaspar is recovering 11, but he only needs to recover 8. I'm going to super glue some of the cuts those pages did.
Yeah, Hal's going to also spend a hit die.
And as everyone is resting, Penelope kneels down next to Iavos and places a hand on his forehead. The father's strength will till the soil, exchanging harvest for his toil. The mother's care will ease the woe, with arms to hold and hands to sew.
A little tear forms in Iavos's eye.
Her singing isn't strong, but it's honest. Penny is going to use Song of Rest, and everyone who has used hit dice to regain hit points during this rest gains an additional 6 hit points.
Nice.
Mm,
that's awesome. A good roll.
Damn.
And utilizing an ability I haven't gotten to use yet, as we take the short rest, I use Arcane Recovery.
Oh!
And regain 2 of my first level spell slots.
I like it.
We're recovering so many things.
Yeah, I realized I rolled my own D6 for
it's
Song of
such
Rest.
Such a good wizard ability.
Lose it.
So this is basically just a full rest then, eh?
I'm still down a second level spell.
Yeah.
You all take a moment to recover from the damage done by the pages. What do you do in this time?
Iavos uses his knowledge of medicine to help bandage people up with their wounded. Listens to the beautiful song that Penny has gifted unto the group, a glimmer from his history, and taking just a moment to glance over his spell book and remember the teachings of his sister.
If anybody would like to take 10 on a knowledge or observation-based skill, you're welcome to.
If I were to do a knowledge arcana, could I ascertain whether my hypothesis about the origin of these books is perhaps more true?
Please, yeah.
Take a 10, you said?
Yeah,
so
take
that's
a 10.
Just a 15. They're all plus 5.
Perfect. So you spend some time going over the books that surround you and going over the pages themselves and following the process that they used after this vellum was made, you can see that there's something they're doing towards the end of the process whereby the pages gain the knowledge to write the books.
Hmm.
Some are turned to pages. Others are simply converted into books.
So both guardian and book in this place were once something living, and some are now used as servants to help maintain and build.
We're in the Tomb of Tomes.
Gaspar can take a 10 on Arcana to try and learn more about this arcane profanity you've spoken of, to see if he can get a glimpse into the procedure of turning a tortured consciousness and either putting that into something or transforming it into a life without form, and almost, as you've said.
As you pore over the pages and what's left of their form, you start to kind of get an idea of what it takes to make something like this. And the key point seems to be the psychic agony of being flayed and then their blood being used to ink the pages that are made from their vellum. It is the process that they use from beginning to end while simultaneously maintaining arcane practices, symbols, somatic and verbal incantations, and then the final product distills all of that. The ink literally on the pages is the blood of those killed.
Can I, with a 10 plus 0 in investigation, determine the creature type of these constructs?
They are, in fact, constructs. But since this is 5th edition, that doesn't mean anything, because there's no hard rules for what a construct is or does.
Getting up and stretching from the rest, Iavos is now trying to take some of his attention off the books. It's too much to think about. It's too sad, almost, despite his curiosity. And he hasn't been tracking our progress thus far. He's been kind of letting the group guide him as he explores the shelves wholeheartedly. But now he's going to move to the window and peer his old eyes out to really get a sense of the space of this place, the magic that holds it together, and guidance himself.
I like it.
What do you see with your old eyes?
I specialize.
19.
Very good.
And as I look out the window, I don my father's spectacles.
I like it. You sit down at the table and put on your father's spectacles to look out upon this great and terrible labyrinth. At first, all you see is the small motes flying through the air and the haze of Biblicor. But then you catch a glimpse of something. It's only for a moment, but you definitely see it. It looks like a bat. A small, pale bat. Over time, you begin to notice more of them. Many more. In fact, you're shocked you didn't see them sooner. Hanging from the overhangs of the roof, clung to the bottom of nearly every room, are hundreds, if not thousands, of small bats. But as you get a closer look, you see that they are in fact pages, formed into flying creatures. And through your father's spectacles, you see that they are in fact malevolent, and they radiate with a hostile energy.
There are guardians in this place. Pages of light, ready to strike us, should we pursue any further. Look to the ceilings. They're near impossible to see when holding still, but I see them.
Penny, since you've gotten here, there has been a pervasive sense of itchiness. At first, you thought it was just the discomfort of wearing this bracelet on your wrist at all times. But then you feel that perhaps it's the bracelet itself that's causing it. It itches. The skin underneath seems irritated and sensitive, almost tender. You want to take it off. You know you can't, but there's a desire to take it off. And in this lull, this long period of waiting, your eyes are drawn to the small motes of dust, the little glowing things in the air. And it has been some time since you've eaten, but for some reason you find yourself hungry not for food, but for these little creatures.
Well, holy shit. Penny absentmindedly rubs at her raw wrist. I would very much like to get out of here and go back home so I can take this off. I don't know why it's chafing so badly, but it's very uncomfortable. And the entire time she's been speaking, her eyes have been following the little motes, unconsciously. But as she trails off, she begins to take a few steps forward, moving closer, circling around them. And then she tries to grab one in her hand.
As you do, your hand reaches out and it moves almost like it's confused. It doesn't seem to be reacting again like an animal, like a bug that might evade a motion. Instead, it seems to almost continue on its path as if it tries to move through your hand. And when it does, you notice that it starts to take on an almost solid form. For a brief second, you see that at the core of the light, a kind of physicality begins to manifest.
Penny, what are you doing?
Shh. She crams it greedily into her mouth and bites down.
Okay. As soon as your teeth find home, there is a sudden burst of what feels like energy, but tastes like rot, like old dead material, like mulch, old vegetation gone long to waste. It's like the bottom of a forest floor, and immediately you find yourself heaving. And the itching, as the itching gets worse and worse on your wrist.
I'm going to run over to her side as she begins gagging and look to her medically. Why would you do that? Who are you, Hal, eating strange things like this?
Yeah, you bring in outside food to drink. Come on now.
I don't know what came over me. I am very uncomfortable right now.
Gaspar proposed a theory before, when you went under, that it seems logical that in your plural nature, the bracelet is siphoning off some of the spiritual energy that it seems people like you use to nourish yourself in ways food cannot. Perhaps it's taking away from you, and these strange lights are made of the same kind of energy, at least one form of it here.
Hal's going to reach and try and grab one.
They just simply move through you.
If the praise and the adoration is siphoned into the bracelet, perhaps there is some we can give you that it cannot take, he says, wrapping Penny in a big hug. He says, you're very dear to me, and I know you're dear to the others as well. This is for you, not for them. And I attempt to just make her feel special, make her know the love in my heart, and give it to her.
Mm. Trying to embezzle some love?
Trying to redirect funds.
You do notice a warming sensation beyond that of just another body. There's something there, but it feels dull, as if over a great distance. The way sugar tastes after you've just eaten more sugar. That dull, distant flavor. Gaspar, I'd like you to roll me an Arcana check.
That is a 16.
Nice.
Your knowledge of these greater planes, and more importantly, your knowledge of souls and their mechanics, is limited compared to someone of, say, who's dedicated themselves to those practices. But you know enough, and you look at these dust motes, these glowing bits, and you're starting to see some commonalities. You wonder if these are, in fact, the remnants of the souls that were so greedily consumed by this place.
Interesting. Hal's going to be standing at the window watching the paper bets.
Rock solid.
Penny leans her weight into Iavos and closes her eyes.
Gaspar's wisp is going to leave the Vries head and begin to rise up towards the other motes.
I want you to roll me a wisdom saving throw.
Frick. Wisdom, my greatest stat.
Remember, we're on a quest, so you can use glory for advantage.
That's true. That is a 13.
That's enough. The moment you begin to disinhabit your head, you are bombarded with psychic energy. All around you, hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of souls screaming at the top of their lungs.
Wisp instantly goes back in. Okay, that's messed up.
It's so bad you lost your accent.
Shit sucks, dog.
Okay, so here's what I know and what I think I know. Each of these motes of light are decayed souls, tortured. There is a heavy atmosphere of pain, but they are still souls. perhaps Penny, who needs the adoration or attention of souls, is able to sense, manipulate them, and in a way, needs something from them. But they cannot give it. They are expended, rotted.
Perhaps they are looking, moving to and fro in such a way to find the book that they once were. And they know no joy, which is what Penny needs. They know no love, just the anguish of this endless place. I'm not surprised it made you wretch. It's a foul thing indeed. But you are strong, perhaps stronger than all of us, and we'll be out of this place as soon as we can. We should press on and undo these wrongs.
Having rested at least your bodies, if not your minds, you continue on your quest. It's more of the same, dull, crushing monotony. You come to a room, you mark the stairs, you go down the stairs. But eventually, you come to a room unlike the rest. There are no books, nor shelves on which to put them. No decoration or adornment, and most notably, no doors. Instead, there is only a single archway, filled with the same stone that sealed the entrance to this place. Engraved in the archway is the following message. A hero's journey never ends. Changes faces, begins again. To the left of it is a book of considerable size resting upon a pedestal. The pages are blank, save the one that you see before you. At the top, the title reads, A Tale of Journeys Past by Halifon Orison Jr.
Welcome back to the experience.
Ow. Ow. Ow.
And
ow.
Welcome back, Dirk. Ow. How was your one-man extermination quest?
Not gonna lie, Rusty. Didn't go great. I took Fandark's sandwich out of the break room for bait.
Hey, that was my lunch!
Go to Mutton King, Fandark. Anyway, I walk out the door and head to the taxi terminal, and that's when I see them. Gull frogs. A fat stack of them cruising around the crab cake fountain of the Mortal Dawn. So I pull out the Sarnie, all ready to draw him in, when out of nowhere, a cassowary-ote kicks me in the dumper and I go flying. The gull frogs see an easy meal, though I couldn't tell you if they were eyeballing the ham and cheese or my meat and veg. Doesn't matter, they both got stiff-billed either way. I haven't seen that many pecs since I woke up in the men's locker room. Pair of puffin' pugs giggling their stunted beaks off at me the whole time. What's that, Rusty?
Nothing.
It's okay, Rusty, you can laugh. It's funny.
No, I'm a professional. I can do this.
Aw, man, I think that swarm of budgery boars snipped off with my coin purse while I was fighting off the cockapangolin. What the hells are they going to use it for? Bird debt? Are they deep in the pockets of some trash can toucans?
Join us next time on the League of Ultimate Questing.
We're learning of the secret art of calligraphy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I liked it.
I'm okay. Very, very excited for where this is going.
It almost seems sappy, but I really love the kindness that happens between Iavos and Pan.
Oh, it's
so
adorable.
Sweet. And if anyone, like, I've actually had a fan ask, like, how come Iavos, like, loves Penny so much? Like, no. Law loves Penny that much. Iavos just can't help but roleplay through that.
Yeah.
I love it, too.
All right, so give me, who is the MVP for this particular episode?
I'm going to say the MVP for me is the unending book puns. Manifested true. Into a tortured soul of their own somewhere in a labyrinth of bad jokes.
I'm just That's happy true. That I got one out.
Like you got like two. You got
okay,
like,
maybe
it was
two.
It was back to back.
Like yeah. Whenever I make puns at home, my wife always just tells me, like, don't try to keep up with... with everyone, like you're never gonna like out pun Michael. Just be you.
I don't bother punning. It's not in my repertoire. Every once in a while, I'll be like, ooh, here it comes.
That's why. Tasty. That's why the reaction on the Discord is your disapproving scowl for yeah. puns.
I feel like they need to be earned.
Yeah.
Although play of the game, I think is clear.
Mm-hmm.
Song of Rest.
That was a good song.
That
of rest.
Was pretty fucking fresh.
I thought Yeah, that's true. I was going to say I thought prestidigitation to try and erase the page was pretty good.
I vote that. That was really cool. And I like doing. I like seeing law always try things like outside of rules as written, which I'm very bad about not thinking about that.
And especially with something as deliberately vague as prestidigitation. It's supposed to be kind of like a, let's see what this can do. It's not like a hard rule set.
And I only do that with magic.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah, and magic is like one of those great places where that can exist. I'm going to roll a D4, since
Doesn't Angelo roll the D4?
Because I went last time.
Oh, yeah, please.
So it's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, Michael.
It's me.
Uh-huh.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The League of Ultimate Questing Battle Axis, episode 18.
Subtitle something or other.
Subtitle something or other.
The Horigami.
The Tomb of Tomes.
I really need to come up with a better naming convention for the episodes, because like originally I was just like, I'm just going to put something here and then later I'll come back and redo them. But now I've realized I've just been doing the one word name so long that I'm like, fuck, is it too late? Can I not go back?
It's hard to backpedal from that.
Yeah. We're going to go around the table. Introducing the players. I've mentioned before, and I'll say it again, my name is Michael Loving. I play Harthax in Season 1, Halifan Orson Jr. here in Season 2, our Univar in God's Fall. And that's it so far.
I usually go second in introductions. My name is Angelo Kaluag. I play Gaspar, the Headless Rogue of the Phantom subclass, the only non-multiclassed character here.
I am Dana Ebert, and happy to be almost out of the Haru stacks. It's Penelope Farthing.
That's what we should name it. We should call this episode the Haru stacks.
Executive decision was made there.
Penelope is many things. She is a faun, she is a bard, and she is a warlock.
Cinnamon roll.
And a cinnamon roll. And besides Penelope, in Season 1, I did briefly voice Amelia in the Little League of Ultimate Questing. I still love those four episodes. If you haven't listened to them, you should go check them out.
I would like to propose that Dana gets a brown and white glazed D20 called the Cinnamon Roller. My name is Law, and I'm here to say that I play Iavos Isadora, witness to the Withering Acre.
Every day.
In a loving way.
And the creative director of Slapdash Studios.
I'm Zach Marcus. I am the technical director for Slapdash Studios, producer and dungeon master for this particular dungeon. I'd also like to thank Hediger the Ediger for his beautiful editing, and Bree Golden from Golden Stylus for busting out this unbelievably adorable fucking map.
Yeah, it's a
very
cool map.
Fresh map,
it's
of assets. Good.
If I flip tables.
If we did not have that map, we would not be able to flip tables or jump on tables.
That is true.
Agreed.
Yes. Our formation was on point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Zach says this whole map was hand drawn.
Hand fucking drawn.
Which is very impressive.
She does very good.
Looks quite nice. Anyway, for links to that map, if you are not currently sitting at a computer, check out theluq.com. No dashes, no nothing, just all six of those letters followed by a .com.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There you can find links to our social media where we will talk about things like the show, public appearances as vaccination rates go up and infection rates, hopefully, come down. There is a chance that we may be attending in-person events once more.
You might have even heard something on the mid-roll.
You may have heard something in the mid-roll. As always, the mid-roll will always give you the most current information for what's happening because they don't get recorded months in advance.
Yeah, so those of you not listening, get your shit together.
Yep. Yep. Don't skip the mid-roll, folks.
Also, but you probably skip this too, so.
Yeah, you know.
This is the most skippable part of the episode.
Yeah, it really is.
And on that note, we wish you luck.